The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
Shalom Aleichem Malache Hasharet Malache Elyon Mi Melech Malche Hamlachim Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Oh Shalom Shalom Aleichem. Oh Shalom Shalom Aleichem. Oh Shalom Shalom Aleichem.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. Herschel Finman here. Thank you so much for tuning in. What a great day. It's an Elul morning. Yes, the month of Elul is upon us. That means that Rosh Hashanah cannot be far behind. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring an interview with the Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, Mr. Malcolm Hohenlein. We're going to be talking about the Middle East and anti-Semitism and all that kind of stuff. We have lots of wonderful music. How much more wonderful than could it get than the Schlockrock doing the Beatles version of Shalom Aleichem? It doesn't get any better than that. We have the second half of the portion will feature insights into the portion of Ki Tetzeh, which is chapter 19 and following from the book of Deuteronomy, an awesome Hasidic Elul story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A Hamas rocket scored a direct hit on a home in Ashkelon, causing light injuries to six members of the family that live in that apartment and to about 50 residents of a nearby building. This was before the ceasefire. The rocket slammed into the master bedroom just seconds after the parents left it to wake up their children and lead them to a safe space. An Israeli soldier hit by shrapnel while on leave died, bringing to 71 the total number of Israelis killed during Operation Defensive Edge. Sergeant Netanel Maimon suffered a shrapnel wound to the head from a rocket fired from Gaza on October 22nd. IDF forces evacuated Israelis living along the Syrian border as Syria's civil war escalates in the area. One Israeli soldier was hit by a stray mortar fired from Syria. Free Syria forces now control the Syrian side of the Kenetra crossing. The crossing is a gated defense that separates the two countries. Humanitarian aid is sent to Syria, while more serious injuries of Syrians are sent to Israel. Druze also export apples to Syria through that gate. 43 Filipino soldiers from the UN peacekeeping forces on the border between Syria and Israel were kidnapped by rebels fighting against Syrian government-backed troops. There are approximately 1,200 peacekeepers from six countries along the border. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met with a bipartisan team from the House Armed Services Committee to lobby the U.S. for continued weapons. Tensions between the Netanyahu government and the Obama administration have increased as Israel directly lobbies Congress and the Pentagon for supplementary weapons supplies. Four Egyptian men were beheaded by a Sinai-backed terror group for allegedly spying for Israel. A video shows men in black masks beheading the accused collaborators as they knelt on the ground. And some good news, Cleveland State University and Israel's University of Haifa signed a memorandum of understanding to formalize their relationship. The two universities plan to develop joint programs in natural science, Middle East studies, and educational leadership. And what could be one of the oldest archaeological finds this week, a huge wine cellar under an ancient Canaanite palace was found in northern Israel. Archaeologists found 40 large jugs, which could hold about 3,000 bottles of wine that still had traces of wine in them. The team found not even notes, but traces of herbs, berries, and honey in the wine and hoped to replicate what the Canaanites were drinking some 5,000 years ago. And before we go to the news, it is the month of Elul, so we're going to blow the shofar and then go right to the commercial.
Thank you. Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hey, Shulfin, and here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Malcolm Hohenlein. He's been here before. He's the Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish American Organizations. How are you today, Malcolm?
So far, so good.
Good to hear. Good to hear.
Almost Shabbos.
Yeah, indeed. There, I've gotten a lot of mail asking me to clarify what actually is going on in the Middle East. There seems to be, traditionally, we understand a Middle East conflict would include, say, all the Arab countries versus Israel. But now it seems that that's not the case. And we see with the last Gaza incursion that the Egyptians didn't want any part of it, and Syria is too busy doing what it's doing, and Iraq is doing what it's doing. So if you could give us a little bit of a hint, and it's actually it's quite interesting to note that the lead piece in today's Jewish Telegraphic Agency was not a news story, but somewhat of a background of what's going on, because I guess there are a lot of people that are confused. What's going on, Malcolm?
I'm not sure there's a good answer for what's going on. When you see that the President of the United States says, we don't have a strategy for dealing with IS, I don't think we have a strategy for dealing with the whole region, and that is that the West has, to a large degree, been sidelined, as you've seen, massive changes. And it can be seen, perhaps, from a starting point of what they call the Arab Spring, which is really an Arab volcano. And that has brought about vast changes, but it was also a reflection of ongoing changes, because it was not, as portrayed, a movement for democracy. It was first and foremost about jobs and the economy and people's needs, as the price of food doubled and tripled. And it started, you remember, in Tunisia with the burning of a cart of a peddler, and then spread to Egypt, where 50% of the people today still make less than $2 a day, and the chance of revising the economy is a long shot. Second, it's about failed states, that going back to the Sykes-Picot Agreement post-World War I that created countries like Syria, like Libya, which really are not real countries. There is no Syrian identity, a Syrian nation, a state, rather, but the people were Shiites, Alawites, Sunnis, Christians, Druze, Huranis, everything but Syrian. And then you see the breakdown now, with Kurds creating an entity within it, with all of the factions fighting each other and fighting against others. Third, it's a Sunni-Shiite divide over who's going to dominate the region. And this plays out in a number of ways, and it was also the information revolution enabled people to communicate. Now, this manifests itself in a new divide in the region, where you have Saudi Arabia, the UAE, the Gulf States, Egypt, Jordan, maybe even the PA lining up together against Qatar, Turkey, and Iran. Iran is considered the major enemy and threat in the region. Turkey, increasingly, as its government becomes more radicalized, and Qatar, because they support all the wrong groups and because they are in an all-out battle with Saudi Arabia. And so you have now a war going on where you have four groups seeking to develop empires: the Muslim Brotherhood, which succeeded initially from Egypt to Morocco, winning all the elections, and thank God that's fallen apart in a large degree. The Saudis, who push the Wahhabi agenda throughout the region. The Turks, who want to reestablish the Ottoman Empire. And Iran, that wants to reestablish the Persian Empire. On top of that now, you have the Islamic State, or called ISIS, ISIL, Islamic State in Syria and Lebanon, and then it was in Iraq and Syria. this is a movement that has had phenomenal growth using the most extreme methods that one would think would turn all populations to beheading publicly of people, and instead they have found that this tactic works. Now other groups have adopted it, from Hamas to terrorist groups in Syria and even the Syrian government, because they see that it somehow instills fear in their enemy and gains them recognition. ISIS was a few hundred people a year and a half ago, was 5,000 people a year ago. Today the estimates range up to 50,000. They are reshaping the region, because today you cannot define the borders of Syria. Lebanon today has 1 million Syrians. It has Hezbollah, a very weak government. Syria, there are almost 1 million Syrians, perhaps 750,000 in Jordan and 1 million in Turkey. Syria has changed the identity cards, meaning that these people will not be able to come back. So he's done ethnic cleansing. He's also being more and more confined to the Damascus, Aleppo strongholds, and that is Assad. Even the border with Israel now has been taken over by rebel groups, some IS presence, but not primarily. It's more al-Nusra, but it puts them 200 yards from Israeli-held territory, and we've seen some cross-border incidents. I cite it because it is a reflection of the changing situation and the changes on the ground. Jordan, obviously, is a country very much caught in the crosshairs between the direction, the aspirations of the Islamic State, which would look to take over Jordan from Iraq or from the Syrian border with Jordan, or from the Arabian Desert side of Jordan. The ultimate goal, of course, is the oil in Saudi Arabia and the holy places there. You have Yemen in full collapse, with the radical Islamist groups taking over increasingly, and the supposed successes of creating some sort of a stabilized government having fallen apart. These are only a few of all of the factors that we have to take into account. The good news is that Sisi has, the president of Egypt, has tried to stabilize the situation and has taken on Hamas. One could only imagine if Morsi had been the president, the Muslim Brotherhood president, what this war would have looked like and how different. He has destroyed 1,000 tunnels going into Gaza out of 1,500, so 500 remain. He's taken on the terrorists in the Sinai, who had been given free rein under Morsi, and thousands came there. It had Al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, and all sorts of other groups, including IS. IS is in Gaza as well. The Israeli war was far more successful than they're giving credit for dismantling a lot of the Hamas infrastructure, even though they still remain in place. And the changes that we see now, the attack in Libya recently. So Libya, again, not a real state, 147 tribes, no unifying identity. And we see that the Islamists are playing there as well. And it goes as far as Morocco. It goes well into Africa, even to other parts of Asia, and the influence, the involvement of Iran and terrorist groups in South America, and of course, into the United States.
I mean, if you're just joining us, our guest is Malcolm Hohnlein. He's the Executive Vice President of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. So who would ever thought this mess is going on 100 years since the end of World War I with the breakup of the Ottoman Empire? It's just absolutely amazing. I mean, the goal of, what's always, I always thought, is that since then, the goal of the Arab world was to create a pan-Arabic state stretching from Morocco through Iran. And it seems, though, with all this factionalism, that such a goal is unachievable. Would you say that's correct, Malcolm?
I would say that it's less and less likely, but you never know with the trends that we've seen now with the disruption. You know, ISIS, for instance, had very large camps training 10 to 14-year-old boys. It gets us very little attention, but they are all training for the future. They look to the future. They need very little infrastructure to win. And we saw that in Iraq, where they came in with a couple hundred guys, took over Mosul, the Iraqi army runs away. So I wouldn't predict what the Middle East will look like in 50 years or 25 years, maybe even 10 years. Right now, you're right. The factionalism, the divisions, the Sunni-Shiite divide, the radicalization of regimes. And when a country like Turkey, which was a proud demonstration of secular Islam, has become more and more Islamicized under Erdogan, and likely to be even more so, he appointed a prime minister who's even more extreme. So the tendency, and this goes to the Central Asian Muslim countries, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, others that want to be pro-West, but are really put under the screws. And you add to that Russia pursuing independent policies, supporting the Syrian government, selling to Iran, doing anything it can to be anti-American and to compete with America, and we saw its actions in the Ukraine. So we see a world in turmoil. It's not a region. It's the whole world is in turmoil. And the one thing that's predictable is that nothing is predictable.
Right.
The promise of the new world order has really turned us into old world disorder, as you pointed out. This world looks more like the 19th century than the 21st century was supposed to.
Mm-hmm. I've often said that people are basically the same barbarians they were 5,000 years ago, except they're more sophisticated at it. In preparing the news, I came across a headline. I didn't quote it over here because it's not relevant to Israel news. But the Hezbollah leader Nasrallah said that our supreme enemy is ISIS. This, to me, when I saw this, I almost like jumped out of my chair. It's like there's such a tremendous paradigm shift. And the world, or the Arab world, which was so focused on Israel, which was like getting in the way of everything, it doesn't seem to be in their news feeds anymore.
Well, Israel still is in the crosshairs and the unifying factor when they want to bring groups together. But you're quite right. There is a different assessment on the part of many countries like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt, etc., who now see Israel as a source of stability. When the king of Saudi Arabia holds a press conference and talks about the massacre in Gaza and said the fault is Hamas, it's not Israel, it's Hamas. When you see the cooperation between Sisi, the Egyptians, and the Israel, much better than the cold cooperation and often duplicitous of Mubarak, let alone the all-out hostility of Morsi. The role the PA played in recent weeks, even though many would say marginalized role. And another thing is the strengthened unity within Israel. That one of the characteristics of this conflict and the recognition of what is going on in the region, it has brought Israelis together in a way that we haven't seen before. And an openness on the part of many in the region to see Israel as a source of stability. Arab leaders have said to me that Israel is our only hope against the enemy, i.e. Iran. He said, we'll condemn them, but we pray for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting enough. You mentioned before of tensions between Qatar and Saudi Arabia. These two have been very close allies traditionally, having been like on the same page. They're both Gulf oil state countries with basically their main objective was to sell as much of their oil as they possibly can. Yet you see now there's tensions between those two countries.
It's more than tension. There's an all-out conflict, and that's been going on for a number of years. It's ideological. It's got a lot of roots. There was thought that when the young emir who replaced his father, retired at the age of 62, I think 2 years ago, but quite the opposite. The father still controls the situation, and they have become more and more associated with supporting Hamas, supporting other groups, radical groups, including, we believe, IS, and everything they do is focused on being anti-Saudi and anti-UAE. They call it a country built on a television station, meaning Al Jazeera, and denounce it and speak against it. But Qatar's role has been very disruptive, and the proposed sale by the United States at the $11 billion in weapons spend is very disturbing.
Talk about that a little bit more. How is it that we mentioned that there seems to be growing tensions between the Obama administration and the Prime Minister Netanyahu, and weapons were held up for a couple of days last week, this big sale of $11 billion of arms. Is it something to worry about, or is it something I remember way back when the United States sold AWACS to the Saudis and all the Israeli and Jewish lobby groups were jumping up and down? Is it just another AWACS, or is there something else, Malcolm Hohenlein?
look, there are tensions between always between the closest of allies, and sometimes the personal chemistry between leaders isn't what it should be. But the fact is, the United States and Israel are still bound by common interests, common aspirations. You see it reflected in the 90% plus votes of Congress in support of Israel. You see the polls of the American people, including now after this conflict. And also the administration, while there have been some problems like the issue you raised, the fact is that military and security cooperation is at an all-time high. There was some difficulty. It has been resolved largely. And the Hellfire missiles, which was the issue, it was not the drawdowns and it wasn't the daily stuff that Israel needed, or defensive weapons like Iron Dome was not affected. It was the Hellfire missiles. But we understand that they will be coming to Israel, and that the, let's say, layer of bureaucracy that was added has been resolved. But the truth is that when you look at the interests of the two countries, when you look at what Israel represents for the United States, and of course the United States for Israel, that is really the true story. And we have to work much harder to educate and to sustain the American people when we have this campaign of delegitimization. You see the manifestations of anti-Semitism in the United States, not just in Europe. It's not comparable, but it's still, it is there, and it's not something we can ignore. But the overall relationship still remains very strong, very solid, and we have to work in it with our elected officials, educate them, teach them, because they have so many distractions, so many issues that they have to worry about that, you know, they can't deal in depth with everything as we do. But I think the record is very strong. And by the way, it's not just a sale to Qatar. It's also a sale to Turkey, a sale to other countries that we ought not to be arming, that we ought to be holding to account more for their activities. And this is a feeling spread throughout the region, and also some of our European allies who themselves engage in questionable activities, but, you know, look to the United States for leadership. So we have to try and minimize the tensions and expand the cooperation, build on it, and enhance it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Our guest today, again, if you're just tuning in, is Malcolm Hohenlein. He's the Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Your organization, the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, is a great conglomerate of energy and wealth and Jewish thought here in America. How is your organization conveying to Israel that America's got your back, and we really want you to do as much as you can for your survival, Malcolm?
Because we say it. we had the first solidarity missions, meeting with Israeli officials. We were there the day after the fighting began, when they started shooting on the south in heavy numbers. We organized and helped to bring many other missions. We are sending key opinion molders to Israel. We are working. We set up a program called America's Voices for the last 10 years. We're now sending movie stars, Hispanic leaders, Black leaders, others. We have all sorts of programs to reach out to American people. But we also reach out to the leaders of Israel, that they have to know they're not alone, that the people of Israel have to know they're not alone. We did ads together with the WJC and all the major newspapers saying that American and world Jewry thank the soldiers of the IDF, because they defended not just Israel, but the Jewish people. But that is what this war is about. Hamas's goal and charter say to destroy Jews, not just Israel. And we know that their goal, that they target Israel, but they mean all of us. So what the IDF did, and the 70 people who gave their, lost their lives, 71 now, the 60 soldiers who are still in hospitals, those who gave up their livelihoods for weeks, did so in the defense of the Jewish state, but also the Jewish people. And the government of Israel, look, it's not perfect. This is not Disneyland. They're dealing in a very difficult circumstance. And I tell people I wouldn't want to be prime minister for 15 seconds, because every decision, you can't afford to make a mistake. And every decision has to be weighed, has to be thought through. The president of the United States has a lot more leeway. And even there, we've learned, we have to, we're held to account, and we, the consequences can be very great. So our job is to build the ties that those who seek to divide us from Israel, who engage in all of this propaganda about the, you know, divisions. I think young Jews if they understand it, they're educated, and that's one of the big problems is that we ignore our youth. They don't know. Even those who get a good Jewish education generally don't know how to answer the charges. We have to do much more to educate them and to strengthen the ties. People should visit Israel, should show the people of Israel that we're there. The tourism suffered greatly. The economy suffered greatly. Now's the time for us to show our appreciation. That means the Jewish community. And to reach out to our elected officials, to educate them, to talk to them, to our non-Jewish neighbors and friends. You can do a great deal. And a show like yours is a vehicle to reach many people who may skip the headlines and not read beyond the, you know, the superficial reports that they see on television, which distort and misrepresent the reality of what's going on in the Middle East today and what Israel has done.
Indeed. Our Jewish Hour is doing its part. We're sending our daughter off to Israel for a year this coming week. One more question, one more quick talk, if we can talk about it, Malcolm. You mentioned before about the demonstrations and the rise of anti-Semitism in European capitals. It's also going on in Australia and in parts of South America. The rise of I wouldn't call it exactly blatant anti-Semitism yet in Israel, in America, but we are seeing, for example, around the country, demonstrations supporting Hamas and the afterwake thereof. Could you comment on that, please, Malcolm?
Say that again. Sorry.
We're seeing a rise of in a populist movement of supporting Hamas. Like during the whole Operation Protective Edge, there were demonstrations by pro-Palestinian groups in America. We had one in Detroit. There was a huge one in Chicago. They've been ongoing in New York. Could you comment on this, please?
Look, it's a very disturbing trend, especially that young people whose ignorance is being played upon, who get exercised. I mean, I didn't see any of them demonstrating or calling for a boycott of Syria where 200,000 people have been killed. I don't see them demonstrating for the Christians in Mosul who have been wiped out, a community 2,000 years old. So you see the hypocrisy in the activities that they are targeting Israel. They're targeting Jews. Israel is the corporate Jew. It's the collective Jew. So if you can't say I hate Jews, you can say I hate Israel and get away with it. And we see increasingly the intensity of the activities, both by Muslim communities here who are fueling some of this, and extreme left groups and sometimes extreme right, as we saw in Europe, where you go to far enough on the extremes they meet, that the campus now has been quiet largely because nobody was there. Now the campuses are going to become an active seeding ground for more and more hostile activities. We have to do more to protect our students, to empower them, to get faculty, especially Jewish faculty and pro-Israel faculty, to speak up. And by the way, we're getting tremendous support in segments of the Christian community in the United States and Hispanic community and others, and those students are willing to stand up on campus, and they do take on the fight. We have to embolden our students, and they have to be educated so they're confident in the arguments they make. They have to know that they will be backed like these groups are. They can engage in the most irresponsible activities at administrations, do little. They try to avoid it. They don't want the controversy. They don't want to be drawn in. Well, it's too bad. You have a responsibility. This is the administrators, the presidents, universities, to protect the students and the rights of all students. You certainly protect the rights of those who are critical of Israel. It's imperative that they be held to account to support our kids. This is largely based on ignorance. No one who really studies what happened, and the UN came out with a report about what happened in Gaza just the last 24 hours, and it completely vindicates the IDF account. 72% of all the attacks took place within 3 kilometers of the border. 5% of Gaza, 5% was touched by all these attacks. Now, Israel carried out thousands of strikes and did it with such precision, and more than half of those who died were terrorists. The proportion of men to women, for instance, was much lower than in any conflict the United States engaged in. The number of civilians versus those who were military in Afghanistan was 3-1. In Hamas, it was 1-1. And if you figure out 5,000 attacks and perhaps 1,000 civilians killed, that means 1 in 5 attacks took the life of a civilian. Now, nobody can argue that this was haphazard. This was done without care, that they didn't, they avoided critical targets when they thought civilians would be there. This story is not being told. The fact that people all along were coming to Israel for treatment, that Israel has a hospital on the border of Syria treating people who wounded in the Syrian war, that that the leaders of Hamas send their own families to Israel to be treated, and that there was never an economic boycott of Gaza. The only things that were restricted were dual-use materials. And one of the issues was concrete. Now we see how the concrete was used. 500 tons in a single tunnel, and with all the sophisticated equipment, everything that should have been going to the people, they could have built 20 hospitals, 40 schools, 20 kindergartens, massive amounts of things to benefit the people. And Israel took a bum rap on all of these counts. And I think it's imperative that the government of Israel is trying to do a better job in communicating the message, but we also have to.
Indeed. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us. Our guest has been Malcolm Hohenlein, the Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Thank you so much for shedding some light on this very confusing subject, and we'll keep in touch.
Good, and I hope that people dry out in Detroit, and we're all very concerned about it.
Thank you so much for your concern. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968. MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. That was really heavy. I think we need a mood changer. This, coming up now, for your listening pleasure, is the one and only Mordechai Ben David, Ein Oid Milvado, there's nobody else but him, capital H.
Rein, da, 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 da,
Of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. What would the Jewish Hour be without a rendition of the Klezmer Tango? This is the Budapest Klezmer Band. Is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you.
All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Hey, Shultheim here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We got time for one more quick one. This is Kobi Roeh. He's an Israeli singing star singing about the Promised Land. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Hey, Shulfinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Ki Teitse. We're continuing along with Moses' review of the mitzvahs. There's just tons and tons and tons. It's like a whole comprehensive list in this week's portion. What's the theme? Last week we talked about the theme of all the mitzvahs, because if you're just going to give a list, you got to have a reason why you're grouping them the way you're grouping them. Okay. Last week we talked about compassion. This week we're talking about keeping the norm. That seems to be the identifying theme in the portion of the week. The very first mitzvah, it's very interesting, you know, because sometimes when we talk about things, the headlines seem to like, ta-da, what's up first? And if there's something you didn't want to talk about, where would you put it? You kind of like bury it. The very first commandment in this week's portion talks about the Jewish way of pillage and plunder. And it says there, if a guy's on the battlefield and he sees a beautiful woman, what should he do? It says he should take her home. And the question is then asked, wait a minute, what's going on over here? You have a soldier. He's engaged in battle. And we tell him, no, Jews are different. We just don't have our way with the women on a battlefield. You have to take her home. You have to let her get ugly as what happens to her. Just like take off her makeup, take off her fancy clothes. Just let her sit there for a month. And then if after this you still want to marry her, okay, you get to marry her. And if you don't, give her a bus pass, a bus ticket, and put her on a bus and send her back home. If she still has a home after you, of course, this is a soldier, so you probably wiped out her home. But this is the deal. And the question is asked, how could such a thing happen? How could we allow such a thing to happen? And the answer which is given is brought down as a simple interpretation is that the Torah speaks to the norm. Under normal circumstances, killing people is not allowed. But then you have the dictates of war, whatever the reason happens to be. So it's a normal thing that what goes with pillaging and plundering. So here the Torah says, we understand that people have normal psyches, but they have to do it in a Jewish way. People have passions, people have desires, and the Torah says that we want you to be a human being, be a normal person. You're not an angel, but you have to do it in a Jewish way. Last week we talked about compassion. That's still continuing and carrying on through to this week also as well. And indeed, with all the commandments that are mentioned in this week's portion, that this portion is always read in the middle of the month of Elul, happens to be my bar mitzvah portion, hu ha hu, and is therefore a preparation for the new year. What are we doing this month, during at this time of the month? We're taking stock. We're looking at, did we act like normal people this year? Now, then we have to ask the question, so what's normal? Well, my grandmother used to say the expression of wilde chaya, wild animal. That would be a person who's not acting properly. Did we do what is expected of us? Okay. Everybody has their foibles, and God knows that. We know about not turning on electric lights on Shabbos, but what happens if a person walks into the bathroom like 3 o'clock in the morning and flips on a light? So it says, Einus Rachmana Patre. Hashem says, oh, I got you on that one. That's just normal behavior. The person had no intention of doing anything wrong. God says, he didn't do anything wrong. He's still sleeping. He forgot all about whatever. He just acted normally. So the Torah says, don't worry, we got your back on it. So what do we have to do now? We have to act like human beings, not like animals. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I could talk about this for a long, long time, but we have to take a quick commercial break. Don't go away. We got an awesome Hasidic story. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com, RabbiFinman.com. Right on the first page, the home page, we have a contact link. You contact me, it sends me an email right to my inbox. I send you an email right to your inbox. And we live happily ever after, in a normal manner, of course. You'll also find on RabbiFinman.com archived editions of the radio show. We have the last 4 weeks of up, plus this week's. This week's will go up sometime, hopefully this afternoon. You'll also find archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, and Hasidic U story, which are missives by yours truly in various media, which convey, hopefully, Judaism in an educational and entertaining way. And there's also the very important donations page. We're in September. Thank God. Baruch Hashem. Today, August 31st, we paid for July. Now all I have to do is pay for August and September. But you guys came through. Thank you very much. I understand people are busy. Their basements are flooded. People are away on vacation. You have what to do. And understood. And I appreciate that July is done. Now, there's one less thing I have to worry about. Now I just have to worry about August. And I'm not even worried, because at this point, I know that the Jewish Hour has been on for 18 years already. It'll continue because of people like you going to the computer right now, going to RabbiFinman.com, clicking on the donations page, choosing a number, putting in your own number, paying through it with PayPal, all very safe, secure, and allowing Detroit's only Jewish radio program to continue because of people like you. Don't want to do it that way? No problem. Send your donation of any amount to, and I mean any amount, to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe, 200 years ago, had a disciple by the name of Shmuel Munkus, who had a bit of a sense of humor, and some might say a bit of a strange sense of humor, but he got the point across. It once happened that he checked into a certain village. He was on his way to Lyozhna to spend Rosh Hashanah with the rabbi, the Rebbe, and while he was there, there was an itinerant preacher. Itinerant doesn't mean homeless. It just means he traveled around making money, preaching. And he was a fire and brimstone preacher. He told all these people how bad they were and all the things that they were doing wrong, terrible, terrible things, really awful people that they are, and then the divine retribution which is waiting for them. And all these people they got upset by listening to these people. They were simple people, and here's this rabbi, and he's telling them how terrible they are, and they felt really, really bad. So this Shmuel Munkus, who was staying at the same inn as this preacher, kind of knocked on the door after he was done, and he came in, and he was carrying a slaughterer's knife. Evidently, he was either a slaughterer or he bought it. And a slaughterer's knife, this is probably one of a knife for like lambs and goats and whatnot. It was probably about 12 inches long. A cow knife is about 2 feet long. And a chicken knife is about 6 inches long. So he's got this knife, and he stands there. He's standing there with a little bit of water and a whetstone, and he's sharpening the knife. And this preacher says to him, what are you doing? And he says, well, you know that the day before Rosh Hashanah, it's customary to pray at the grave of a tzaddik, a righteous person. He said, yeah. He says, well, this village doesn't have anybody righteous like you. So we need a grave of a righteous person. So we're going to have you be that person. So he said, what? He said, wait a minute. I'm not that righteous. I did that sin. And he said, that's just a little tiny sin. That doesn't count. And he continued sharpening the knife and looking menacing at this preacher. And he said, but I did this sin. If that's it. And he did this. And he went on to list all of his sins. And he said to him, put the knife down. And he grabbed them by like the lapels. And he said to him, how can you possibly say anything bad about these very simple, wonderful people who have an earnest desire to cleave to godliness? When looking at people's faults, we have to look at our own first. Those we can clean up. When looking at somebody else's, we have to look at the Almighty and say, this is a good guy. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. And we hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
Ось тут морні та мами, сулі в кіндер.